The number of Americans living with chronic non-cancer pain is estimated to be around 100 million people. And while not all of the roughly 2 million Americans suffering from opioid addiction arrive there from drugs used to treat chronic pain, many of them have. So how can the nation's healthcare system perform a balancing act that helps patients who suffer from chronic pain while also combating the opioid epidemic? To discuss this and more, I turn to Dr. Bradford Butler, a chiropractor and author of the book, The Blueprint for Back Pain Relief, The Essential Guide to Non-Surgical Solutions. Dr. Butler is also the owner and director of Oakland Spine and Physical Therapy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
First, let's get into a definition of chronic pain. How do we describe and determine what is chronic pain?
So chronic pain is temporal in nature, meaning it has a time aspect. There's no specific definition of it, but it's usually things that are lingering or ongoing. And it doesn't have to be constant, Joe. It could be just recurring pain. So, for example, something chronic in nature, you might have pain periodically through the week, but for many weeks in a row, not constantly. Whereas the other form of pain, which many of us are aware of, is acute pain. And acute pain is usually sudden onset, okay? So it's something that happened typically due to a trauma or an injury of some kind that traumatized tissue. So a car accident would be acute, but low back pain, for example, that started as mild and infrequent, that continues until it's more constant and more severe, that would be more chronic pain, which is really the problem that we're having right now in our country.
Yeah, I just turned 54 this past Monday, and in my back's feeling it. I can tell you that I'm having some. So what we know is that somewhere around age 30 to 50 or so is when people start developing back issues.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I think the way that our culture is heading right now, that's actually starting younger and younger. I personally have been doing this for 20 years, and the same types of chronic pain I used to see in people in their 30s. Believe it or not, we're seeing in teenagers. Hmm. And a lot, we can get into the why of that, but a lot of it, as you and your listeners can imagine, has to do with technology, a lack of movement, and the idea here that we're spending so many more hours in a sedentary position, which is sitting, or repetitive motion areas in our work, or in school. And so what's happening is that we're developing problems that what we would consider to be older people had years ago to now very young people are actually having chronic issues as well.
You know, there was a very in-depth report this morning that I read from the Washington Post. I think it was released today on the opioid crisis and the lack of response to it from a governmental level. So how is the healthcare system responding to opioids? And we'll get to sort of some of the connections between chronic pain and opioid abuse. But how is the healthcare system going about managing, helping people to manage their chronic pain and not abuse opioids?
I think it's terrible, actually, and really nothing is actually being done in terms of boots on the ground and changes really being made. There's a lot of politics about it right now. It's in the media. So it's kind of like a sexy topic that's getting a tremendous amount of press, but we're still not seeing a ton of movement happening in this. There are still patients that we're seeing that are on opioids. There are still, millions of Americans that are getting prescriptions for these things. I had lunch with a former Division I football player last week, a younger guy who because of injuries sustained on the football field, was given opioids and basically no supervision with them. And that became the gateway to his heroin addiction. And he's turned his whole life around, but this is kind of still happening, where right now it's, like I said, mostly posturing and political for probably social media hits and for ratings, but we're still not seeing enough of it. I think, you know, if you were to ask me why is this happening, it's because we haven't changed the basic premise of healthcare, which is money-driven. And there is tons of money in pain management. And I don't see Purdue Pharmaceutical, who is the manufacturer of these types of drugs, when they're getting a slap on the wrist. And like I said in my book, even though they were complicit in schemes to get more prescriptions to people that shouldn't be getting them, they got basically a financial slap on the wrist and profited billions. And so what are they going to do? I mean, they're following the money trail. And until that changes, I don't know that we're going to see a ton of actual change.
Yeah, it took 2 years into the current administration's administration before we even got a permanent drug czar. So that office was without direction, without policy, and I think a lot of effort from the federal government was more on prosecuting cases of abuse and not really on treatment. So let's get into what causes. Now, we can't get into what causes chronic pain from a general perspective. We don't have enough time for that. But in your area of expertise, let's take back pain, for instance. How do we get to having back issues? What are some of the things that we're doing or not doing that causes those kinds of problems for us?
Well, I think the idea of back issues in general is going to be something we'll always have just due to the way that we live our lives. And like you had mentioned earlier, getting older in age and things. I think what we really need to change is how we treat our back issues. So back problems become an issue for 80% of our population at some point in their lives because we kind of all do the same sorts of stuff, right? So a lot of people think that they have to lift a heavy object or blow their back out doing something traumatic to create back problems. But really, back in the majority of cases, back problems start not with an injury, but with bad posture. It starts with a lack of mobility, and it starts with the joints in the spine itself not functioning properly. So anytime you're not moving and your joints aren't moving, the tissues around the spine start to adapt to that, and they start to get shorter and tighter, which creates kind of like this vicious cycle of a lack of mobility getting worse over time. And when the spine doesn't move, it actually deteriorates. So the spine needs motion. It needs flexibility in order to stay healthy. That's just the way it's designed to work. So trauma adds to that, but the majority of cases happen from people just not moving enough on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Left untreated, those tissues then degenerate and the condition gets worse. So it involves other tissues. So it moves from the joints to maybe the muscles, and then from the muscles to the ligaments, and from the ligaments to the discs. And then it creates an inflammation cycle because it gets irritated easier and easier as time goes on. So when we get to the point of back pain, where it actually is hurting, that's when we want to educate people because they have choices at that point. Now, there's two ways to look at this. Do you want to treat the symptom or treat the cause? And that's to me, the crucial decision that your listeners have to make.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to treat the symptom, they're going to typically look for drugs, right? We're basically all raised on TV commercials that tell us, take this, take that. They're all over the counter, right? And so we start living on this cycle of over-the-counter medications. When they're no longer effective, then we go to our medical doctor, right? What is the medical doctor going to do? In most cases, they're going to prescribe medicine because that's what they do. That's what's in their toolkit. That prescription drug is a stronger version of what we've been taking over the counter. And again, its goal is to mask the symptom. It's not actually fixing anything, right?
Right.
You don't get rid of pain get rid of the cause of pain by just masking the pain.
You have to
treat the condition.
Yeah, you're just making people comfortable, right?
Yeah, but yeah. And it's great when you're younger, right? We've all done it. I mean, it's fine. Oh yeah, it was just a little thing, and I took this, and I feel better now. But as like you had mentioned, as we get a little bit older, and the damage accumulates, that little thing. Has that problem, which was small when you were younger, has become a much more significant problem, and now it needs to be treated with stronger things, like even stronger drugs or surgery, which is still not what the research suggests is the best decision to make. So I like to teach people that it's a lot like your dentist, right?
Mm-hmm.
We should all go and make sure we have proper dental hygiene, and that allows us for early diagnosis as well. So if they discover a problem, it's not a big procedure. But if you never go to the dentist and you never get your teeth cleaned and never go for hygiene, by the time you get a lot of pain in your mouth, it's usually because of something more significant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now the procedure is more invasive. The cost goes through the roof. And kind of that's where we are with back pain in our country right now.
Now, we talked about some of the ways that it's treated with drugs or with surgery. How do we prevent it from the beginning? What are some of the things that we can do? We talked about being mobile, having an active lifestyle. What other things or what specific things can people do maybe in their younger years to sort of stave off the inevitable?
So we when we talked earlier about that, it's kind of like, look at what we're doing right now and do the opposite. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if your kid, you come home and your kid is sitting there on the couch after sitting in school for 6 hours, now they're on the couch for 2 hours playing video games, and then they're sitting on their computer for 2 hours doing homework, and then on their phone before they go to bed, right? Mm-hmm. So anything that gets you up and moving, you know, walking is one of the best things that we can do to prevent back pain. A lot of people don't realize it because it's not, like, trendy or in, but just walking does a couple of things. It stabilizes our core. It stretches our joints out and lets them move within a normal range of motion, and it creates stamina, right? So we kind of need stamina to get through an entire day. Then, of course, there's exercise, weight-bearing exercises to strengthen our muscles. There's more flexibility-based things like yoga. I'm a huge fan of yoga for preventing back issues. There's lower impact types of things like Tai Chi and things of that nature. So basically, if you're looking at why people get back pain and you're doing the opposite, you have the best chance of not getting back pain.
What are some of the risk factors for developing low back pain? If you develop it, what's happening to you from that point forward if it goes untreated?
So I'm going to go back to the cavity analogy here. So once you what are the risk factors of not treating? Is that the question?
Yeah.
So all physical problems, and your listeners should know this, all physical problems will always get worse with time if they're not treated properly. They don't just stay the way they were. They're always going to deteriorate, and that's because for our body to stay healthy, tissues have to regenerate. And the only way they can regenerate healthfully is if they have healthy tissue that they're replacing. If you have degenerative tissue, it's going to be replaced by more degenerative tissue, and then it's going to escalate from there.
Yep.
So early treatment when you have back issues is very, very important.
So we talked a little bit about how irresponsible some of the medical profession is with treating this. You yourself are a doctor. What specifically are you doing with your patients to help sort of that balancing act of treating and helping to manage pain and avoiding opioid use?
So first, I just want to say we're really fortunate to be in a country with the best doctors in the world, and we have the best technology and the best medicine. And it's really only a minority of the doctors that are really abusing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the culture of prescribing something to mask a symptom that is inherent within all of the medical profession, really. We practice in a different environment. We practice in the rehabilitation environment. So our goal in our playground here is all about doing things and therapy that will enhance the body's ability to naturally repair damage. So our role is not to mask symptoms. It's to allow the body to heal the tissue that's causing the symptoms. And there's lots of different professions that help with this. We utilize them, many of them, in our clinics. And so in my book, I actually talk about the different therapies, what they're most advantageous for, how they work, and what a reader should do in terms of making the right decision on how they approach their back pain. But things like physical therapy is just such a great profession. It helps so many millions of Americans every year, again, to help with flexibility, posture, range of motion, strength, support. We use chiropractic care. It's the best form of manual medicine for getting joints mobile again, which is where kind of initial back pain usually begins, is an inability of joints to move. We utilize acupuncture for inflammation to reduce muscle spasm and to increase blood flow. And acupuncture, by the way, is starting to get research now because it's been around for so long and so successful. One study showed that you would have to take two different types of drugs to give you the same exact benefit of acupuncture.
Hmm.
So there's no known side effects. It's incredibly natural, and it's increasingly found to be very, very effective for treating pain. And of course, massage therapy. You know, some people think of massage therapy as a luxury, but in our clinic setting, muscles are a real big part of our problem because we live in such a sedentary culture right now where muscles are way out of balance. Some are very, very tight. And those muscles, if they're not massaged and relaxed, are going to create further problems with the back pain sufferer. So we use a team approach in our clinics to allow patients to have the best of every world that's possible out there.
So why do doctors continue to prescribe opioids and other drugs to patients with chronic pain long after they've been taking them for a reasonable amount of time? That is long enough to provide some relief while other treatments can be prescribed. In many cases, it's patient demand.
One of the top reasons that doctors prescribe medications was just patient demand. And a lot of that started years ago. I actually talk about this in my book a little bit because I think it's important. Back in the day, drug companies were not allowed to directly advertise to the public.
Mm-hmm.
About 20 years ago, they passed a law allowing them to do that. And what you started to see was a very common tagline most of your listeners will be familiar with. Ask your doctor about was the tagline. And whatever the drug that followed would be there. So what they were basically doing is they were brainwashing the general public to say, hey, if your doctor won't do it, there's probably another doctor that will do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this started impacting pocketbooks, and we get that. And doctors run businesses. A lot of people forget that. We're not just, you know, we are here. We get into it to help people, but we have employees, and we have overhead, and blah, blah, blah. So it affected pocketbooks. And so what we started finding is that a great example, I think the study was on antibiotics for sinus infections or for upper respiratory infections that were mostly viral. And they were still giving them an antibiotic, even though it does nothing for a virus. And it was because they were afraid that if they didn't, they would go somewhere else. So I think there's a twofold thing. Number one is we have to get rid of the financial incentive, mm-hmm. right, first of all. I think the second thing is to be an educated consumer. I think if your doctor, as a patient, you have to be accountable for your health. And you don't just abdicate your responsibility to your longevity to somebody else. You have to be a willing participant in that. And that also means that if your doctor says, hey, you shouldn't be on this anymore, you should be taking their advice about that as well and not pressuring them to put you on something because there's usually a reason why he doesn't want you on it.
Mm-hmm. Are there safeguards that doctors can put in place to help patients take opioids appropriately?
I think we kind of have them. We're just not following them,
okay.
Kind of like our gun laws, I guess. There's plenty of laws on the books, and if they don't follow them, or in this case, rules in the books. And I think what you're going to see coming now with having a drug czar and having more sensational claims being made public about what's actually happening with this crisis, I think you'll start to see more stringent enforcement of these rules. And I think we're at a point now where that's really what we need. You know, it's like your kid, right? You mm-hmm. can give them all the rules, but if they don't follow them, at some point you have to drop the hammer, right?
Right.
and lay down the law. And I think we're kind of at that point with the opioid crisis where we need Big Brother to step in and say, you know what, we left it up to you guys. It's not working so well, and people are dying. I mean, this is not like a small problem. So we're going to take charge, and then heavy fines will be set in, other rules. So we see in other areas of our life, I think this is the time we need to step in now.
What are the top things that you want folks to take away from the blueprint for back pain relief? For folks that read that, what's your intended message?
So thank you really for having me and asking this particular question, because what I have found in 20 years is that the patients that are suffering from chronic back pain, they don't even know that there's really a choice, and they don't have the education to make the best choice for themselves. So the purpose and the entire purpose of the book is to let your listeners or any readers that do buy the book to have all of the information they need to make the best choice for them. I'm not saying, even though I'm a doctor, I'm not saying that you should never use drugs. I'm not saying that. And I'm definitely not saying we don't need surgery. In fact, surgeries are vitally important in some cases. What I am saying is that we're only still telling one side of the story. And if everybody out there that's listening to you right now knew what I knew, we might make some very significant changes in our choices to allow us to live what we like to say is a longer, healthier, happier, pain-free life. And there's nothing more important than actually healing for somebody to actually have that happen. So when they read the book, they're going to get tons of research in the beginning of the book about why they should make an informed decision. They're kind of getting the other side of the story about drugs and surgery. Then we talk about the different ways that back pain is actually created. So you had asked me earlier about how do you get back pain. The book's filled with that. There's some anatomy in there about, I want you to know about your spine, because if you don't, then you don't know where your pain could be coming from. And then, of course, how would you treat it if you had all the information? So there's a prescription in there for the avenue which I think everybody should follow, which is this. Unless it's an emergency, you should start with the most conservative, least invasive choice first. That's how we should start anything with health. And then if that doesn't work, you move to the more invasive, more costly things, like drugs and surgery. So if your listeners get nothing out of this other than, hey, there's more information for me to know before I make a choice, that means I've gotten my job done.
Dr. Bradford Butler, author of the book, The Blueprint for Back Pain Relief, The Essential Guide to Non-Surgical Solutions. Thank you for having this important conversation with us.
I appreciate you so much for having me on.
Drugs and surgery are not the only options to live a pain-free life when it comes to back pain. Consider exploring other methods that go beyond masking the pain. Massage therapy, exercise, physical therapy, and acupuncture are alternative measures that could assist the body in repairing itself. And remember that you are the best advocate when working with your doctors. For WAER Digital, I'm Joe Lee.